Welcome back to the Roundtable. Named one of the top 20 guitarists of all time by Rolling Stone magazine, Richard Thompson is one of the world's most critically acclaimed and prolific songwriters. In addition to his beloved catalog and many other honors, Thompson has received Lifetime Achievement Awards for songwriting on both sides of the Atlantic. He'll be in the WAMC region early next month, playing the Bardavon in Poughkeepsie, New York on November 7th, and Stone Church in Brattleboro, Vermont on November 8th. Will Hermes is a regular contributor to NPR, The New York Times, Rolling Stone, and Pitchfork. He's the author of Love Goes to Buildings on Fire and Lou Reed, The King of New York. Hermes spoke with Richard Thompson for WAMC.
Richard Thompson, welcome to the Roundtable.
Well, thank you. Nice to be here.
It's good to see you. Where are you based these days? Where am I talking to you from?
I'm in London. That's London, England, not London, Ontario, or any of the other Londons. I seem to bounce back and forwards between New Jersey and London these days. Yeah, but I mean, I've gone back and forwards. I used to be in California. So it's a longer commute, but I've done a lot of bouncing in my time. You know, back and forwards. I know all the flight attendants' names. You know, first names.
That's what happens. Well, you've certainly been touring a lot, and you have been busy. I mean, you're making the rest of us look kind of like slouches. The pandemic times seem to have been very, very productive for you.
Well, I think like a lot of musicians, I've been on the road forever. I mean, since I was a teenager, basically. And as a singer songwriter, if you like, you're always trying to write songs, you know, in between, you know, jotting notes down on the road, and then when you get some time off, you're kind of trying to scramble to finish stuff, get stuff ready for a record, you know. But it's always, you know, it's like you're doing two jobs, and you have two brains, performing brain and writing brain sometimes.
Right.
So when COVID happened, suddenly we're looking at ourselves saying, oh, we've got time. And I had all this time to write. So, you know, I wrote the next, you know, two, three albums, you know, like I wrote a musical. I mean, I've written, you know, I'm just way ahead. I'm just so far ahead. It's ridiculous. I'm not done yet. You know, there's life in the old dog, as they say. So I'm very happy to still be touring. And I'll be featuring some new material and making a new record, I think, in January. So, all exciting.
Wow.
Oh, yes.
And people who get their music online, which is a lot of people, I guess, you can jump on any of these streaming servers and see what Richard's been up to, some of it anyway. I mean, you've been releasing EPs. There was you did a soundtrack record for Grizzly Man, which is instrumental mm-hmm. music, beautiful. Sure. and Ship to Shore is your latest song album.
Yep.
Talk a little bit about making that. I mean, that just came out last year. It's full album with band and the whole nine.
For some reason, well, I know what the reason was actually, but I moved to Woodstock, New York for a year. I couldn't think where to live. You know, I was getting a bit fed up with New Jersey. I thought, well, let's go to Woodstock. You know, there's a community up there.
Connecticut. I live very not far from there. I didn't know you were there. You were keeping it on the down low.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it was like the worst winter I'd ever seen. You know, it took me 2 days to dig my car out at one point. We had this massive ice storm. I'm sure you remember that. Where, you know, every tree pretty much came down, and every power line went down, and you know, there was no internet, there was no power, the backup generator failed. So I thought, is it going to be like this every winter? And also the people I was hoping to see, you know, all my friends in Woodstock, because it was the latest strain of COVID, nobody actually went out. So I never saw anybody in a whole year in Woodstock. It was absolutely crazy. Anyway, so I was there briefly, and while I was up there, I thought, well, let's make a record, you know, in this great Woodstock studio, and you know, the ghosts of Van Morrison and the band and people, you know, will guide us. And I think they did. You know, there was a definite vibe to recording up there. And you know, I flew my band in, Michael and Taras, bass and drums, David Mansfield, fiddle player, that played on some stuff. And it was great fun. We really had a good time, and I hope the music reflects that.
Yeah, we're going to play a little bit of a song from Ship to Shore. This is called Trust.
Can't trust my eyes. Can't trust my ears. The things you say.
From Ship to Shore by Richard Thompson. You're listening to The Roundtable. I'm Will Hermes. The man, the legend, Richard Thompson is with us. He'll be playing at the Bardavon Opera House in Poughkeepsie on November 7th. He'll be at Carnegie Hall on October 30th with another great guitarist, Tommy Emmanuel, also all over, Brattleboro, Hartford, later in November. Check his website for tickets.
Yeah, well, we have some shows later in November with Beausoleil as well.
The great Cajun band,
The Cajun band, which was supposed to happen I think last year, but Michael Doucet broke his arm. I mean, for a fiddle player, you don't really want to break your arm, but he did. So he's recovered. Looking forward. I think we've got five shows with those guys, so that'll be fun too.
Super, super exciting. I was just reading one of the other things that you did over the pandemic years. I guess that was when it was written. Was you wrote a memoir? Bee's Wing.
That old
Yes.
thing. Yes. Well,
You.
one must write a memoir while you can still remember. It's a memoir of the 60s and into the 70s, which you're not supposed to remember because you're supposed to be too drugged out to actually
Right. Otherwise, you weren't there.
have any brain cells left, exactly. And it was kind of it's such an interesting time for me. And I realized writing it how much happened in those years, how intense it all was, and I suppose some of that is down to just being young, and doing things for the first time, like the first time you play Albany,
Exciting town.
exactly. All these things that are brand new, and you go, wow, this is incredible. And if I wrote about it, 20 years later. It wouldn't be quite so exciting, but playing Poughkeepsie for the 112th time, it isn't quite as exciting as the first time. So, but people are very interested in the kind of characters that were around in those days, like people like Hendrix, who we jammed with. People say, "Oh, you play with Jimi Hendrix?" Well, yeah, you play with Led Zeppelin. Yeah, of course. It wasn't a big deal at that time. These people were not famous at that time. They were just people hanging out in a club or something, just sitting in, jamming. It was just like normal,
I know it's kind of hilarious. I was, revisiting the book this morning, and you're just casually tossing off. It's like, oh yes, we played with Hendrix there. We jammed with at the what is this? With Led Zeppelin at the Troubadour, and there are some tapes of that which went missing. Have they turned up, or we don't
I
know?
don't think so. I think we know who grabbed them, but they never did show up. That'd be interesting to hear.
Yeah, and I imagine, and working with working with all the the folks you worked with in your own band, working with Sandy Denny, and working with Nick Drake, who's having a bit of a renaissance lately. I wrote a piece for the New York Times just this past summer, in fact, about this big reissue that Joe Boyd wasn't really involved in it, but it was just some old tapes that were of Nick doing his work. And you played you played on his first album and sort of knew him.
I knew him. Yeah, I mean, I played on his first two records. So, I suppose they say the cream eventually rises to the surface. You know, but in Nick's case, I think it took an awfully long time. It took a VW ad on the TV, you know, to actually expose him to a wider audience. But people realize that the really great quality of the records that he made. I mean, not just his songs and his singing and his great guitar playing, but, wonderful string arrangements, great engineering, the whole package. If you do something that good, then sooner or later, and in this case, later, people are going to notice and they're going to, check it out. So I'm glad Nick finally got some recognition. I think it's time for Sandy now, time for people to realize how good Sandy Denny was, because she was the most extraordinary singer and a wonderful songwriter, and should be as well known as Carole King or something. Just a fantastic talent. Died age 31, much too early. So if we're going back to the past, that then let's include Sandy in the pantheon of great artists.
I mean, it's interesting to me because, so much great music came out of that era, the Fairport Convention era, the Witch Season productions. This is all, came out of the British folk scene. And you guys kind of invented the British version of folk rock in the late 60s.
We did.
Yeah, you did.
He said with great modesty, yes.
Yes, and over here in the States, I think at the time, I was pretty young then, but it didn't really land here until some years later, and people have returned to those records and just said, wow, as good as anything that was made during that era. But I think, have you been noticing that lately there's a resurgence of interest in younger artists, just in the craft of folk song and acoustic guitar playing? And
I think that there's been a steady influence, over the last, maybe 10, 20 years, that I notice, younger artists really wanted to continue almost that troubadour tradition where if you're any good, you can get up with a guitar or a keyboard and you can sing live to a room full of people. And I think if in a sense popular music has gone somewhere else, it's become like these massive stadium shows. Artists who I'm losing respect for, basically miming, in order to get through all the dancing and the paraphernalia, the whole showbiz thing.
Right. High-tech spectacle.
Yeah. And you think, well, if you're any good, you can get up at a party and sing, to a room full of people, whoever you are, but popular music really has gone somewhere else. And I think there really is a tradition of singer-songwriters that goes through, Pete Seeger and Woody Guthrie and Dylan and James Taylor and up through I'm blanking on a whole generations of people, Paul Simon, if you like, but people who just sing fairly simply. Maybe tradition influenced, but not necessarily tradition in style. But people who just do that basic thing and keep it real, because you want it to be real.
Yeah, and it's super exciting to me to see, younger and not so young artists. I mean, Jason Isbell, I don't know if you've crossed paths with, her name is pronounced Muireann Bradley. She's an young Irish woman. Plays acoustic blues.
Yeah, well, we haven't crossed paths, but I know who she is. Yeah, it's very good. And Jason Isbell, I'm a big fan of. He's just great. He's tremendous.
That tradition, I mean, just I feel like we should dip into it just a little bit more music, because I wanted to ask you about songwriting as craft. I mean, you've got like a catalog of classics. Maybe one of the records you released recently was a live record of a trio from Honolulu, and you do an old song, I Want to See Those Bright Lights Tonight. So let's maybe we'll listen to a little bit of that.
Well, I'm so tired of working every day. Now the weekend's come, I'm gonna throw my troubles away. If you got the cafe, mister, you do all right. I want to see the bright lights tonight. There's crazy people running all over town. There's a silver band just a marching up and down. The white boys are all spoiling for a fight.
That was I Want to See the Bright Lights Tonight by Richard Thompson, recorded in Honolulu in 2022. You're listening to The Roundtable. This is Will Hermes. I'm here with Richard Thompson. He's touring the area in the coming weeks. So check his website out for dates. The Bardavan Opera House in Poughkeepsie is coming up November 7th. You are still writing songs despite having this catalog of incredible songs. Do you still have the same kind of fire to write that you've had over the years?
Well, I can't help it. I sort of have to write. Ideas just keep coming to, so I keep writing. And I've written, I don't know, 400 songs or something. But the trick is to not repeat yourself too badly anyway. To try and find new things, and that's exciting to me. That's an exciting challenge. Is to keep exploring, keep looking at what the limits of a song really are, and you can think of Maria Callas singing an aria by Puccini. That's a song. It's a very complex song in some cases, but it's still a song. And to something like This Land Is Your Land, well, that's a song too. Even though Woody pinched the tune from somewhere else, it's a song, and everything in between. I've got, so many great country songs. It's a song. It's a discipline. It's probably a skill you can learn, I think, to a large extent. And
Yeah, do it long enough.
yeah, do it long enough. And also, I think, like most songwriters, you would study. You'd study older songs. You'd study older forms because you might find inspiration going back, that will inspire you to go forwards. I grew up listening to a lot of Scottish traditional ballads, well, which are so well crafted, that they're so well written, and they can convey so much in such a short space of time. That's a great place to learn how to write, really. Obviously, you don't want to write like it's the 15th century, but you can write contemporary songs with the knowledge that you've gained.
Right. Some of that ancient vernacular along with modern vernacular, I guess.
Well, I just there's a kind of a song language. And it differs from place to place. You can say country music has a song language, has a vocabulary,
Right.
and it's quite a narrow vocabulary, but it's a very effective vocabulary. And when people sing a country song, there's no doubt about what the subject matter is. There's no wasted lines. It's incredibly tight. It's usually well sung and well played. So that's that world. I'm more in a kind of like a Celtic world where the influences are Celtic, but it's the same thing. You try to write economically, you try to hit emotionally right on the head. You try to get there to that emotional place, And if you're true to yourself, if you're true to what you find inside yourself, then that becomes a universal thing. That becomes something that the audience will recognize and can identify with. And this is how songs come from you and get embraced by other people. And at that point, it's almost like the song doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the audience, belongs to other people who enjoy to listen to it. Perhaps they sing it as well. You kind of put it out there.
Yeah, and you were certainly listening to your contemporaries back in the day, and I know you covered Dylan, you'd covered Joni Mitchell with Fairport in the early days, and both of them were tapping into old folk and country music and folk music that came from England and Scotland and Ireland as well. So the forms
Absolutely. Yeah. Well,
prove.
Dylan and Joni Mitchell were both very connected to the tradition. But Bob Dylan came to England in 62 and was hanging out with people like Martin Carthy and was really learning about all this traditional music, which he then used in songs like Girl from the North Country and Masters of War. He's taking traditional elements and using them in a contemporary way. Joni Mitchell's, her family is basically Scottish. So I'm sure some of the influence came down into what she does.
Yeah.
Lots of those great Canadian writers like Gordon Lightfoot, they're very connected to history. They're very connected to Scotland and Ireland and England in their knowledge of song.
Right. And speaking of Dylan, I mean, who famously played Carnegie Hall a long time ago. You're playing Carnegie Hall. Is this the first time you're playing Carnegie Hall, or have you
I
headlined there
think
before?
I'm not headlined. I think it's the first time I've done it. As a co-headline. I've done it on a like a charity show where I did like one
Right.
song. So that was my previous experience. Well, that'd be exciting. He was a Scotsman too, of course, Carnegie. He came from a family of bootleggers, actually, which is kind of interesting. But whatever he learned bootlegging in Scotland, he applied very successfully
Yeah, I guess he did well.
to
He
North
did well with
America.
it. I know. Yeah, just the outlaw tradition can flourish here, for
Absolutely,
better or worse.
yeah.
But
But
anyway, well, that
anyway,
yeah.
it's a great honor, and it'll be really exciting to do it. And Tommy's a great guitarist. If you're not familiar with him, he's very, very
Tommy
accomplished.
Emmanuel on the bill.
Yeah, very accomplished acoustic guitar player. I shall be shaking in my boots, trying to keep up with him. But there you go.
Hey,
So
well,
hopefully towards the end of the show we'll do something together, and that'll be fun.
very exciting. Wow, that's like
Yeah.
cage match. That two powerhouse acoustic guitar players. How, as a guy of a certain age myself, how do you keep your fingers limber? Do you practice a lot every day, or
Well, whenever I
'cause,
can, probably not
yeah.
every day, because some days you're on a plane all day, you can't actually physically do it. But whenever I can, I practice as much as I can. I'm lucky not to be arthritic at this point, which is good.
Excellent.
If you can keep everything working, why not? Just keep practicing, keep exploring, try to find new things.
And will you be touring with band for these shows or solo?
This is acoustic shows. My wife will sing a bit with me, Zara Phillips. She'll sing some harmony at some point in the show, which is nice to have that
Yes.
change of texture, if you like. These are acoustic shows, and I wouldn't do another band show until probably next year, depending on when my next record comes out. So this is acoustic for now.
Very exciting. Can you talk about the new record at all? That's exciting to hear.
Well, I think the songs are really good. I shouldn't be saying that. That's far too egotistical. But
It's okay. Go for it.
as I was saying, I mean, during COVID, I really wrote a lot of songs, and I'm still writing a lot of songs. So there's a lot to choose from. So I'm trying to just craft an album where everything fits together, where the songs feel like brothers, that feel like they belong together. So I'm very excited actually to do re to record versions of this particular selection. I think it's going to be good.
All right. Well, we're looking forward to having you in the area playing live, and I guess we'll hear some of those new songs on the tour,
Oh, you will.
which is very exciting. As along with some of the old ones, maybe we can go out on an older one, 1952 Vincent Black Lightning, a little ditty that people might know
Sure,
from
lovely.
back in the day. And Richard Thompson, thanks so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Will. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, says Red Molly to James, that's a fine motorbike. A girl could feel special on any such like. Says James to Red Molly, my hat's off to you. It's a Vincent Black Lightning 1952. And I've seen you at the corners and cafes, it seems. Red hair and black leather, my favorite color scheme. And he pulled around behind and down to Box Hill. They didn't arrive.
Richard Thompson will be playing the Bardavon in Poughkeepsie, New York on November 7th and Stone Church in Brattleboro, Vermont on November 8th. Will Hermes is a regular contributor to NPR, The New York Times, Rolling Stone, and Pitchfork. He's the author of Love Goes to Buildings on Fire and Lou Reed, The King of New York. His substack of music writing is at newmusicoldmusic.substack.com. Related links are posted along with this interview at WAMC.org. You're listening to The Roundtable.